Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and we're on location this morning with OPM Director Linda Springer. Also joining us in our conversation is Tom Romeo, Director of IBM's Federal Civilian Services Practice. Director Springer, we've been talking with many of our listeners about their internal agency and departmental plans to address the pending retirement wave. You mentioned this earlier. Could you tell us about OPM's role in this effort across government?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to hear that they are planning because it's a serious issue, not one that we're exaggerating. We are often accused at times of being alarmists on this issue, and people might think, well, you know, we haven't seen this big wave, and sure, people are going to leave over time. But the reality is that we're assuming normal trends and rates of retirement. What's different is that we have a larger pool of people or group of people who will become eligible. So what we're doing is taking our normal rates of retirement, historic rates that have been relatively stable, and applying those to the larger number who are eligible. We don't have any reason to think that they will retire at a slower rate than they have before. Neither are we assuming that they'll retire at a faster rate. So while 60% over the next 10 years of federal employees, civilian employees, will be eligible, we're assuming that two-thirds or 40% of the employees will actually leave. That would be the normal pace, and that sounds like a large number, but we don't have any reason to assume that they will go at a slower rate. So the question then is, in OPM's role of being the lead human resource arm of the government, what are we doing to help agencies to prepare? And they are starting to prepare. They're looking at things like flexibilities. They're looking at to bring new people on. They're looking at things like ways to mentor, to have newer people that are coming in, to partner up with people who are more experienced, who over the next few years might be leaving. We're looking at ways, candidly, to transfer that institutional knowledge that's in the heads and has been developed over the many decades of service from those individuals, not just only from the mentoring standpoint, but even, candidly, documentation standpoint and other things that we need to have readily available so that we don't miss things. It isn't just a question of going out to get someone who's knowledgeable and well-trained, but it's how do you get things done at this particular department in the United States government? That's what comes with experience, and that's what we're at risk of losing if people leave without the right preparation. Succession planning is very important. OPM has directed through the PMA and through other ways that agencies need to be doing very rigorous succession planning. We've got it in our own strategic plan, not just for OPM, but that we're going to hold ourselves responsible for making sure that the agencies are doing it. As you know, OPM recently put out a new strategic and operational plan. It's a 5-year plan, but we've held ourselves accountable for partnering in many areas with agencies. That's a little unusual. But we think it's that important that we need to hold ourselves to task for making sure they do it. So it's a combination of the planning, assessing the risks, who's vulnerable for leaving, who's eligible, what would be the risk to the organization if those people do leave and when they leave, and what are we doing? Mentoring, bringing in new people, transferring and capturing that knowledge, but also making sure that we understand the flexibilities that are available, not only for bringing people in, but keeping people on longer. Dual comp waivers in some cases are available. We're working with Congress, and the President has, in this 07 budget proposal, proposed that we fix something that prevents part-time service for people who retire under or are covered by the CSRS plan. And I've spoken about this a number of times, but we need the Congress's help to make that fix so that then people who would ordinarily go to a full retirement could consider a partial retirement and still make themselves available to the agency on a part-time basis without disrupting their pension benefit.
So although you're assuming a constant rate of retirement, it sounds like you are encouraging and taking steps to encourage employees to stay longer with the federal government.
We'd like them to. That's the best answer. And candidly, when I talk to people around the country, they would be very open to some sort of a stepped down or reduced level of association. But they like what they do. They're good at it. From their own quality of life standpoint, they'd love to be able to, you know, periodically on some smaller scale basis to be able to come in and work with people. And they care about the mission of their agencies, and they'd like to be able to see things through in an orderly way. not necessarily get up and work the normal work schedule day after day.
There seems to be a bit of a debate around this this next topic, so I'd be interested in your perspective. Do you encourage employees to think of government service as being one part of a career versus staying in federal service for the duration of their careers?
We think, Al, that the traditional model of coming early in a career and staying here for 30 or more years is a very important pattern, but we don't think that that should be relied on as the exclusive pattern going forward. It's our sense that there's a lot of value to the government to have people who come at various stages of their career. We think we have a lot to offer to people who want to come at those different stages. There are some people who want to come early on and develop, get training and develop their skill sets, and we have a lot to offer there, and that's terrific. We have other people who want to come mid-career. They've already been trained, but they're looking for something new, and they're looking ahead to a certain second stage of their career where they'd like to do certain things, and they think the government's a great place. There are other people who want to come late in their career. They're well-seasoned. They're very focused on a particular type of skill or opportunity, and maybe they want to come and find the cure for cancer. And what better place than coming to work at the National Institutes for Health, for example, and where you know you're going to have the support and the resource. It's not like you have to start a startup company when you're 60 years old to do something like that, and what are the prospects? So at various stages, we have things to offer, and we think it's important that we not limit ourselves to just any one group. We think that there's a model that's viable where people will come and go back and forth between sectors. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that there's a lot to the good. We believe that there's kind of that anchor, though, pattern, traditional pattern, that will also continue to make sense.
So there really is something here for everyone.
I believe so.
Great.
Well, Director Springer, finding the cure for cancer or working on that is certainly a rewarding career path. What feedback do you get from federal employees in general about the rewards of a career in government?
We do every other year, Tom, a survey called our Federal Human Capital Survey of employees at all agencies on a wide variety of things. But the things that score highest that really show what drives people and why they stay on is far and away, above everything else, their sense of the sense of purpose, the sense of the importance of the work that they're doing, the public spirit that they have, the sense of accomplishment that they get, and that what they're doing really matters. That is always scores highest, very, very high. In the last survey, which was done in 2004, actually another one is going to be done this summer, but 91% of federal employees say that the work they do, they believe is important. And they're right. It is important work. And so I'm glad that that registers. And that's pretty consistent. Now, another thing that I would say right behind that scores very highly is the value of the benefits programs. And people, especially in this day and age when they see other companies maybe in the private sector with an erosion of the benefit plans, they see more and more the value of the plans that they have, whether it's the health benefits or retirement, having both the equivalent of a 401k or TSP as well as a defined benefit plan, becoming increasingly rare in the private sector. The health benefit program has a wide range of choices of options. Others that are being added, long-term care, dental, vision, things like that. The whole idea of telework is becoming more and more important to them when we look at surveys. And we're a little behind on that one, but I think that all of those create a work environment along with the sense of mission that score highly.
Great. On a related topic, we know that OPM, GAO, and OMB are encouraging the link between employee performance, organizational outcomes, and pay. How is your office supporting the development of performance-based organizations?
Well, you're right that all the organizations you named, I think, share the sense that performance should be a factor in compensation. And my sense of that is that that's no different than what people have lived with from when they first started in elementary school. You got a grade based on how well you did. Everyone didn't get the same grade, at least not in my school. And if I didn't do well in math, I didn't get a good grade. Or if I, you know, did better in history, I'd get a good grade. So things like that. So all through life, all through your jobs, whatever organization you're in, by and large, performance is a factor in how you are assessed and ultimately, I'll use the term broadly, compensation, and whether it's a grade or a selection or whatever. So I think it's just very logical, and it's unusual, frankly, when people, when we're trying to hire people, they are surprised to hear that we're in a compensation construct that doesn't include performance as a major factor and actually rewards longevity and recognizes that to a greater extent than performance on a year-to-year basis. So, yeah, we are believers in that, and I am personally. I think it can be done right. We have 90,000 employees today, whether it's our SES program that OPM monitors and oversees, as well as other demonstration projects, some dating back for a couple of decades, that have run very successfully with performance as a factor in compensation. So OPM works very closely in reviewing and certifying that the agency's SES programs meet certain standards that can incorporate differentiation and that leads to pay differences. We're working closely and have been with the Department of Defense as they've rolled out their NSPS system. And they rightly and I think appropriately are taking this a step at a time. They've started with a group of 11,000. They'll get better and better from that experience and expand it to others. We've worked very closely with them, and I think successfully, in developing good guidance and implementing issuances. DHS is working on developing their good performance programs, and performance evaluation and development is really the underpinning before you can even get to pay differentiation. You've got to have that other in place first. Senator Voinovich, we've worked with him, reviewed legislation that he has announced that he's planning to introduce that would require good performance management and take the first step of prohibiting agencies from giving a pay increase, the annual pay increase, to anyone who gets less than a satisfactory. So that's a very small step, but it's a step. It's, you know, it's the 5-yard pass as opposed to the 100-yard bomb, but we'll take it. So those are things we're working on. And as you know, we developed a draft proposal, Working for America Act, last year. And I think that the value there was to generate some thinking and some discussion. I hope that we can find some other agencies, smaller agencies, that we can build on some good performance management that's already going on.
Director Springer, you mentioned a little bit health benefits, and at the break we talked a little bit about electronic health records. So we understand that you are playing a role in promoting electronic health records as part of the HHS Committee on Personal Health Records. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the goals for electronic health record and specifically your role on this committee?
Well, there is a program that's underway right now led by Secretary Leavitt and the Department of Health and Human Services to address exactly that, the Health Information Technology Initiative and the opportunity. This is something that the administration feels very strongly about, and there are many in government who do. Congressman John Porter is also working on some legislation that focuses on that specifically for the federal health plan, and we certainly believe this is important. And the idea is that you've got both the provider and the consumer of health care that need to have information on a timely basis, accurate information, secure information, but information that's there about their medical history, their prescription history, in a way that it's usable in a timely fashion. The VA has this for members of the VA system. Secretary Nicholson has told the story of people that have been in situations, for example, where their medication was lost, and they could go right to the VA. They were traveling, for example, and they could go right to the VA system, and before they even get to the door of the local VA office, there's someone there with their medication. That's the model that we need. I think that we've seen last year, unfortunately, with Hurricane Katrina in that area, the value of having electronic health records and not relying, having the vulnerabilities of a paper-based system. So the concept is certainly proven. It's hard to argue with. I don't know who even would. It's very valuable. What we're doing with the HHS effort is particularly focused on the Consumer Empowerment Work Group. There are a number of work groups. OPM co-chairs the Consumer Empowerment Work Group, and it's an important work group because we get to work with consumer groups, patient advocacy groups, as well as healthcare providers and the insurers that are involved, and hear a lot of good ideas about setting standards for privacy, for accuracy. Candidly, the consumer is where we really need to focus. They're the ultimate beneficiary, and we need to make sure they have an awareness. We've made recommendations. Actually, the whole effort, not just our consumer group, met earlier this week and presented the secretary with 28 recommendations, which my understanding is he's pleased with those recommendations, and that'll be the point at which we go forward.
You talk about several constituents in this equation, the providers, the consumers, and obviously government. What kind of partnerships are needed across government and the private industry to make this a successful implementation?
Well, there needs to be a strong partnership in a lot of levels. One is from the actual construct and the requirements to build the records and to continue to populate them. There are many in the private sector who are already doing this now. And actually, our purview of this is not strictly for the federal plan. Obviously, it's to set a standard that, and a model that would be used for both private providers as well as in the federal plan. So by definition, we've got to be working together. But I think as we develop standards, as we run pilots, for example, our work group suggests a pilot for the chronically ill. And that's a group that has a routine use of the medical system, and we think that there'd be a high receptivity to the personal health record and the whole electronic record program in that group. So there's got to be a strong partnership. This isn't just a government effort.
What does the future hold for the HR line of business? We will ask Director Linda Springer to explain this to us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.